a look at our top stories this hour. Iran's leader hails the glorious holding of the Arba'in ceremony this year as millions of Muslims convene in the Iraqi city of Kerbala to mark the occasion. Iran's president rules out the possibility of holding talks with his American counterpart in New York, saying Joe Biden has carried out the same policies as former U.S. President Donald Trump. Plus, evacuations are ordered in the island of Kyushu in southern Japan ahead of a large and powerful typhoon. Hello and welcome. Your world news come to you live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. It's good to have you with us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has praised ceremonies as part of the annual Arba'in commemoration, including the million-strong annual march toward the Iraqi holy city of Kerbala. Speaking during a commemoration service attended by students, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the Arba'in march is a miraculous event which signifies God Almighty's will to keep the flag of Islam flying. This move, said the leader, is not driven by any man-made policies or measures. Rather, he added, it is the divine power which, through this large-scale manifestation, opens a bright road ahead of us. Ayatollah Khamenei said ill-wishers and those distorting realities are making relentless efforts to launch campaigns against key Islamic events such as the Arba'in March. The leader then urged all to be patient and remain steadfast in treading the path of righteousness. People in Iran have marked Arba'in, the 40th day after the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. Ceremonies have taken place in the capital, Tehran, as well, to mark the event, which is the largest annual religious gathering in the world. Yusuf Jalali has more.
Iranians across the country have commemorated Arba'in, the 40th day after the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein. People in the capital, Tehran, marked the occasion, too, by walking southward to the town of Ray. That was a symbolic walk by those who could not take part in the Arba'in march held in Iraq, where pilgrims from across the world marched toward the city of Kerbala, which houses the holy shrine of Imam Hussein.
I'm so sad that I couldn't visit the holy shrine of Imam Hussein this year, but I took part in this walk in Tehran to play my part in preserving the legacy of Imam Hussein.
This is a march for all of the freedom seekers, no matter what their religion is. Imam Hussein sacrificed his life 14 centuries ago to save our religion, so this could be a lesson for all people to uphold righteousness, even if it comes at the cost of their lives.
Imam Hussein is the third Shia Imam and the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. The Shia Imam and his companions were killed by the tyrant of their time, Yazid, during the Battle of Kerbala some 14 centuries ago. Every year, on the occasion of Arba'in, millions of pilgrims from different countries travel on foot to get to Imam Hussein's shrine. The march is meant to sympathize with the Imam on the pains he endured during the Battle of Kerbala.
To us Muslims, participating in the Arba'in march in Kerbala is more than a religious duty, but a passion for preserving Imam Hussein's ideology and promoting it among the new generation.
Imam Hussein and his companions were martyred after they refused to pay allegiance to Yazid, for they believed he did not practice Islam, as taught by the Prophet Muhammad.
As Imam Hussein said, he rose against Yazid to revive true Islam as introduced by the Prophet Muhammad, who was Imam Hussein's grandfather. By his refusal to pay allegiance to Yazid, our Imam exposed the fact that Yazid was not treading the path of Islam.
This year, from Iran alone, some 3.5 million people took part in the Arba'in walk in Iraq, in a show of respect for Imam Hussein, who is known among Muslims as a symbol of resistance against tyranny. To Muslims, the Arba'in walk is of key importance. These people couldn't make it to Kerbala this year, but they felt bound to take part in this symbolic march, for they believed by doing this, they would help preserve the legacy of Imam Hussein. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The number of pilgrims attending the great religious gathering of Arba'in in Iraq has surpassed expectations. Our correspondent Mahdi Abbasian reports from the Iraqi city of Kerbala that hosts the holy shrine of Imam Hussein.
Millions of people from all over the world travel to the Iraqi city of Kerbala every year to mark Arba'in. That's the 40th day after the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, the third Shia Imam and the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. The pilgrims visit the shrine of Imam Hussein and his half-brother, Abbas. This pilgrimage is the world's largest religious gatherings. A considerable number of pilgrims opt to travel on foot, starting their journey from the holy city of Najaf, the resting place of Imam Hussein's father, Imam Ali. They then walk 80 kilometers to reach Karbala. Their love for Imam Hussein, who symbolizes freedom and justice in Islam, is the main motive that takes them through the hardships of this long journey.
If you believe in humanity, if you believe in such humanity, you have to look at the views of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He comes out for humanity. He comes out to empower the truth upon the lies. He comes out to empower humanity.
I came all this way because for the sacrifice of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein is my role model, is my biggest inspiration. He stood on the lands of Karbala all alone, and we are here today to chant Labbaik Ya Hussein.
To facilitate the pilgrimage, local volunteers as well as foreigners set up mokips, makeshift stalls and clinics along the roads to provide essentials such as food, water and healthcare.
We welcome all pilgrims of Imam Hussein, whether they are Iranian or Arab, Muslim or Christian. We welcome anyone who believes in Hussein. We provide them warm meals for pilgrims, and it's an honor for us to serve them.
It's our honor to give services to pilgrims of Imam Hussein. Our goal is to help pilgrims, and that's our priority.
There were reports of problems such as shortage of water and mistreatment of pilgrims. However, pilgrims' experience was rather different.
Iranian and Arab pilgrims are treated equally. I have not seen any discrimination. Iraqis did their best to serve the pilgrims of Imam Hussein, just like the previous years. They have shared everything they had with others.
The generosity on these roads is beyond amazing. You walk left, right, and center, you'll see food stores, you'll see water coming. Imam Hussein alayhi salam is not just for the Shia. I recommend every single one, Sunni, Shia, Christian, atheist, to come here because Imam Hussein is for humanity.
People from various countries with different backgrounds travel to Karbala for Arba'een. This shows that Imam Hussein does not belong to a single community, nation, or religion. Therefore, Arba'een has truly become a manifestation of unity and brotherhood. Atiya Basyan, Karbala.
Iranian presidents ruled out the possibility of having a meeting or holding talks with his American counterpart, Joe Biden, during his upcoming trip to New York.
You're off to New York. You're going to speak at the United Nations. You know, President Biden is going to be there. Are you open to a meeting with President Biden, a face-to-face?
No, I don't think that such a meeting would happen. I don't believe having a meeting or talk with him will be beneficial.
Rice, you said there is no difference between the administrations of Joe Biden and his predecessor Donald Trump, because Biden has carried out the same policies as the former government. The Iranian president is scheduled to address the 77th session of the UN General Assembly in the coming days. Back in 2018, Trump launched a so-called maximum pressure campaign against Iran after withdrawing from the 2015 deal, known as the JCPOA, and reimposed anti-Tehran sanctions. Iran says the JCPOA revival hinges on the removal of sanctions and guarantees Washington won't exit the accord again as it did before. A powerful and potentially destructive typhoon is about to hit Japan, prompting authorities to issue mass evacuation orders in a number of areas. Japan's meteorological agency says Typhoon Nanmadol is expected to make landfalls on Sunday. It says the storm will bring up to half a meter of rain. The agency urged residents in parts of the Kyushu island to evacuate before it gets dark. The Kyushu Railway Company has already begun halting train lines. Hundreds of weekend flights in the southern region have also been canceled. Nanmadol has the potential to be the most destructive tropical storm to strike Japan in decades. Shock and outrage has spread across the British black community as an investigation into the police shooting of an unarmed black man in South London has begun. Chris Cabba was killed at the start of the month, and his death has many activists claiming it was unjust or an unjust killing by a racist police force. Robert Carter report at the latest protest in London.
British police have found themselves embroiled in another racism scandal, this time surrounding the killing of an unarmed black man in South London by armed officers on the 5th of September. Following an alleged police pursuit, 24-year-old Chris Carver was behind the wheel of a car hemmed in by two police vehicles in a narrow street before one round was fired, ending his life. He leaves behind a fiancée and an unborn child. No gun was found in the car.
Thousands of protesters have descended outside police headquarters in central London to vent their fury over what they say is gross injustice being carried out by the authorities against Chris and his family. Accusations are swirling around, some of which include that the police who stopped Chris on that fateful day may have known who was inside the car in the lead-up to the fatal shooting. This is, of course, all being investigated, but the protest organisers have made absolutely clear that they are going to refuse to back down until the demands of the family are met and justice be served.
Fighting back the tears, family members spoke of their ordeal after seeing the body for the first time since the killing. News of the shooting has caused uproar, especially in the black community. They feel this was just another example of a racist system out to harm them. Following the backlash, the officer responsible for the shooting has been suspended. An investigation is also underway, but the police watchdog warned it could take 9 months to reach a conclusion. The family expressed anger at the lengthy wait. However, the question of race playing a role will be examined as a factor, providing some small hope that the family's demands will be answered. Robert Carter, London.
There seems to be no end in sight to the war in Ukraine, which is approaching its 7th month. The U.S. unwavering support, especially in the form of weapons, continues unabated. But one thing not mentioned or covered as much is the use of private military contractors. The notorious Blackwater, now renamed Academia, is the most well-known accused of participating in the Ukraine conflict. The firm was also responsible for the Nusayr Square massacre in Iraq 15 years ago.
It was a massacre that was unprecedented, and it highlighted how private U.S. military contractors felt that they were above the law. 15 years ago, these military contractors shot and killed 17 Iraqis, including 2 children. The massacre, which became known as the Nusayr Square Massacre, highlighted what can go wrong when private military contractors are used, especially when it comes to accountability.
We strive for perfection. We try to drive towards the highest standards, but the fog of war and accidents and the bad guys just have to get lucky once.
The U.S. used private military contractors heavily in Iraq and in Afghanistan. Now the new theater of war is Ukraine. Here is an ad for hiring these contractors. Wanted, multilingual former soldiers willing to covertly head into Ukraine for the handsome sum of up to $2,000 per day. Yes, demand is soaring and there are plenty of people who are signing up. But what are they called? Contractors? Volunteers? Mercenaries? Or paid security workers? Obviously, some are former soldiers with the ability to fight and kill. This leaves plenty of room for mistakes, meaning civilian casualties. Remember when Ukraine's president made this announcement? Zelensky reveals number of foreign volunteers for Ukraine, the first of some 16,000 fighters to have already arrived, the Ukrainian president said. He further added, Ukraine continues to receive weaponry on a daily basis from our partners, from real friends. And the weapons are more and more powerful every day. The very same weapons that are given to these volunteers. So far, the number of so-called volunteers to have joined the Ukrainian armed forces could be as high as 20,000, a figure that could even exceed that. The demographics of these fighters are varied. In all, fighters from Eastern Europe and former Soviet republics constitute the majority of fighters. In terms of Western countries, the greatest number of foreign fighters include the US, UK, Canada, Germany, France, and even some that are coming from Japan.
U.S.-backed conflict has brought immense suffering to people in Ukraine and severe economic damage to the world. It has increased military spending in both the United States and Europe. Through the war, or though the war is a tragedy, those benefiting from it are no other than American arms contractors. Raytheon Technology CEO Greg Hayes has bragged about how the Ukraine conflict is good for business.
When it comes to the U.S. private military contractors, the one that stands out is Academy, formerly known as Blackwater. Reports have pointed to its involvement in Ukraine. First, reports emerged in July 2021 that Blackwater founder Eric Prince had plans to create a $10 billion private army in Ukraine. His plans included a private army staff by former Ukrainian combat veterans. However, what is not widely reported was that Academy was involved in Ukraine already since the year 2014. Hundreds of these mercenaries were operating in the country's east and south, but the U.S. has denied these claims. But other Western countries are open in their admission of foreign fighters fighting in Ukraine. Take Germany, for example. Germany's Foreign Office tweet is very telling here. Reports on death sentences against foreign nationals serving in Ukraine's armed forces are shocking. As combatants, they are prisoners of war, entitled to special protections under the Geneva Convention. The UK's involvement has been heavy when it comes to foreign fighters. In June, it was reported how the UK has training centers set up for Ukrainian recruits to train soldiers sent by Kiev, including women, for urban combat. The target for the number of people that the UK can train, 10,000 soldiers every 3 months. Whether they are private military contractors, volunteers, or whatever name they are called, they're fueling the flames of war. It should be mentioned that Russia is also complicit in its use of contractors or mercenaries as well, as it has been reported. The extent and the number, however, is not known. Let's not forget, it wasn't too long ago that the armed groups in Syria were getting help from America, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Turkey. And a source of training for the armed gangs was the notorious U.S. private security firm formerly known as Blackwater. Security circles have long reported that it was sending mercenaries from Iraq into Syria, something which the U.S. stands accused of until this day. Ukraine is becoming eerily similar to Syria, thanks to the U.S. and its European partners, who are keen to make sure that this war continues, from the massive military aid to manpower in the form of these contractors. Pumping Ukraine with weapons has become the main trend for the U.S., leading the Europeans down the same path. So high the volume of these weapons that Ukrainian illegal arms trafficking has become a terrorist threat at an international level. This is just another outcome of the wrong and deadly U.S. foreign policy, in which many Iraqis witnessed 15 years ago, as was the case in the Nusayr Square massacre.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Westerners say, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. History shows independent nations have always made lemonade out of lemons, and that's the story of these days. In other words, Western sanctions will not kill Russia, but will create a new Russia which is gradually embedding deeper into the East. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media for further details. Stay tuned for more. Global Times wrote, President Vladimir Putin gave a significant speech at the recent forum. The core meaning was that the U.S. dominance in the world politics is declining, and it is impossible for any country to isolate Russia. Putin's speech drew several rounds of applause from the audience. Perhaps what everyone was trying to convey was that the rest of the world would go on without the U.S. Gone are the days when Washington dictated to the world to do as it wanted, especially when it comes to Far Eastern integration. A world without the U.S. may be taking shape. The world's largest industrial manufacturing belt is being formed in the Far East. An international pattern of cross-border labor division between China, Japan, South Korea, and ASEAN has been built, and total exports of the region have already exceeded those of the EU and North America combined. The next two decades will see the largest transfer of wealth in history, from both sides of the Atlantic to the Far East, where thousands of wealth management and trust companies are being set up. According to the Global Times, the Far East is becoming the innovation hub of the smart revolution. Beijing, Shanghai, Shenzhen, Seoul, Singapore, and Tokyo are among the world's high-tech cities, and technologies such as driverless transport, airborne IoT deployment, sensor networks, cashless payments, energy-saving technologies, energy storage batteries, airborne surveillance, and telemedic are innovating and spreading far faster in Far Eastern countries than in Europe, the US, and other countries. The attraction of technological innovation has led to a growing number of talented people being attracted to the Far East. Since the financial crisis in 2008, the number of Americans living overseas for work or permanent residence has risen dramatically, with 4 million in 1999 and 10 million in 2019. The Far East is becoming the most favored destination by Americans heading overseas. China, Japan, South Korea, and Singapore all have national talent programs to attract entrepreneurs, scientists, and innovators to the Far East for stable, long-term residency. Russia is precisely the most typical country that is accelerating its leaning toward the Far East. From this point of view, Western sanctions will not kill Russia, but will create a new Russia, which is giving up its illusions about the West and gradually embedding deeper into the East, finding a new self by enjoying the dividends of the rise of the East. Also, according to Reuters, in an attempt to underscore Russia's tilt towards Asia, Putin, speaking to the Eastern Economic Forum in the Russian Pacific city of Vladivostok, said that the West was failing while Asia was the future. Putin said, "We have not lost anything and will not lose anything. Everything that is unnecessary, harmful, and everything that prevents us from moving forward will be rejected." Putin said, "In terms of what we have gained, I can say that the main gain has been the strengthening of our sovereignty, and this is the inevitable result of what is happening now. This will ultimately strengthen our country from within." The conflict with the West over Ukraine has prompted Russia to accelerate a pivot towards Asia and particularly China. Putin said that the West was failing because of a futile and aggressive attempt to isolate Russia, with sanctions was destroying the global economy just as Asia was rising to claim the future. The United States and its allies imposed the most severe sanctions in modern history on Russia for its actions in Ukraine. Putin says the sanctions are akin to a declaration of economic war. "I am speaking of the West sanctions fever, with its brazen, aggressive attempt to impose models of behavior on other countries, to deprive them of their sovereignty and subordinate them to their will," Putin said, adding, "In an attempt to resist the course of history, Western countries are undermining the key pillars of the world economic system built over centuries," he said, adding that confidence in the dollar, euro, and sterling was falling.
Food for thought. Hello everyone. Today, on the occasion of Arba'in, or the traditional 40th day commemoration for the martyr of Karbala, the chief of martyrs Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, we present you a thought-provoking description about our eventual fate, that is death, from the Imam. "I advise you to adhere to God wariness, warn you against the difficult days, and show you the signs of God. The feared, that is death, is about to come with its frightful arrival, drastic befalling, and horrible taste. It will lap your souls and impede you from acting. As long as you enjoy sound physique and enough time, take the initiative in acting, because you may suffer the sudden visit of death that takes you from the surface of the earth to its inside, from its highest point to the lowest, from its affability to its loneliness, from its ease and light to its gloom, and from its wideness to its narrowness, where the intimate friend cannot be visited, the ill cannot be called on, and the seeker of help cannot be aided." We'll be right back.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle.
Today's lesson, limits of kidding and joking. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the limits of kidding and joking with each other. We know that it is important to joke and have fun with each other, but it should be in the limits. For example, when we see the life of the Prophet, we see that he used to have fun or he used to do jokes with the others, but it was within the limits. For example, we see that when the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam was sitting with Imam Ali alayhi salam and their companions, and they were eating some dates. So the Prophet, when he picked up a date, he ate the date and he put the seed of the date in front of Imam Ali alayhi salam. The companions of the Prophet, when they saw that the Prophet is placing the seed in front of the Imam Ali alayhi salam, so everyone started to follow what Prophet was doing. And when they finished eating dates, they saw that the old seeds were in front of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And the Prophet at that time said that, "Oh Ali, you have eaten all the dates." So he wanted to do a joke with Imam Ali. He said that, "Oh Ali, we were sitting here, but you never saw us and you ate all the dates. You even did not share anything." And Imam Ali there, he replied to the Prophet that, "Oh Prophet, I ate the dates, but I was taking out the seeds. But all of you have eaten the dates with their seeds." So these kinds of kiddings or the jokes, these are within the limits, which is not humiliating the others, which is not the cause of someone being humiliated or someone being feeling some kind of maybe uncomfortable in a place. So it is within the respect. So this is the first limit that we need to observe, that we should be in the limits of the respecting each other and then performing a joke, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of the limits of joking and kidding with each other. So we know that we should respect each other, and within the respecting each other, without insulting each other, we can have a joke or we can have fun with each other. We can do jokes with the others if it is within the limits. That's the first thing. The second thing is that it is said that al-mizahu tadhhabu bima al-wajhi, that the excessive kidding or joking or fun, it takes away the respect of a person. So we should have a limit of joking or kidding. It shouldn't exceed, or it shouldn't be in a way that it is excessive when we perform joke. So we need to make sure that we are trying to have an honor, because it says mizahu tadhhabu bima al-wajh, the excessive kidding or joking, it takes away the honor of a person. The excessive joking, it makes a person to be humiliated, and on the other hand, the hellfire is for one who always performs jokes or kidding, and he never becomes serious. So this kind of person does not have any kind of personality. He is always into something which is making fun of others, or kidding, or joking, and he wants to have a fun through this, but on the other hand, he is insulting others. So these kind of people, we should get away from that, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/en/call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Chinese astronauts are celebrating their first ever mid-autumn festival in outer space while sharing their otherworldly experience with people on Earth. The crew had a close-up view of the moon from China's Tiangong space station and their third month in space. On the occasion, the ground crew organized a series of celebrations, including a family reunion for the astronauts. The ground crew also prepared elaborate food packages that had been prepared before the launch of the spacecraft. Typically, the traditional festival is kicked off by the first viewing of the full moon on the 15th day of the 8th month of the lunar calendar. Despite being able to see the moon rise and set 16 times a day, the astronauts say the moon is special on this occasion. Forestry authorities in southwestern China have opened a new canteen for wild Asian elephants in a bid to stop them wandering into villages. The canteen in Yunnan province provides the animals with attractive and nutritious meals while exploring man-animal harmonious coexistence. During these years, the province has explored multiple ways to reduce the encounters between humans and elephants and try to keep the animals away from farmers' crops. There are now approximately 1,400 hectares of dining halls for elephants, with many expanding from 100 to 240, such as corn, rice and sugarcane. They are planted on a large scale and within easy reach of the elephants. The location of such canteens is extremely selective, usually away from villages and major roads, and the chefs are locals. Most of the time, you have to visit an exhibition to see art. But what if art comes to see you instead? Well, a group of artists in Mali have created a floating art venue that will travel up and down the River Niger. It's called the Pirogue du Zem, which is a floating vessel. It's designed to host plays, exhibitions, dance shows, and so much more. The idea is to make art a movable feast that is no longer restricted to fixed venues in cities and accessible to old people. The project was created by a local artist and architect who had a vision to bring art to the masses. The vessel is 20 meters long and 6 meters wide, built with storage and enough space for exhibition. Government officials say the floating venue will showcase Mali's talents and creativity while attracting tourists.
Colombia is known for its tourist attractions and is full of breathtaking natural sights such as beaches, mountains, deserts, and forests. The South American nation is also one of the few places that give tourists the chance to have an encounter with whales. Every year, from July to October, domestic and foreign tourists flock to Colombia's Pacific coast to catch a glimpse of humpback whales. The large animals reach the coast after traveling thousands of kilometers from Antarctica and southern Chile. But for visitors, there are strict rules to help preserve the area and the whales. Tourists are now being welcomed for whale watching after a two-year hiatus due to the coronavirus pandemic. This is also the time when humpback whales start their reproductive process. Art art restoration requires intensive research and training and loads of skill. But imagine the anxiety while professionals embark on restoring rare paintings. Under careful supervision, French restorers are working to give back to 500-year-old paintings their former glory. They were rescued from a fire that engulfed the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris in 2019. These works date back from the 17th and early 18th century. The paintings, including 22 with large format, were temporarily stored in a warehouse and now being restored at an undisclosed location. The fire caused strictly no damage to the paintings, but they have accumulated thick layers of dirt and smoke on the surface after hanging in the cathedral for centuries. Some of the works also have paint loss due to overcleaning that restorers say need to be repaired elegantly.
Africa is taking back some of its greatest treasures stolen by the British back in the 19th century. The Horniman Museum in London has agreed to return the artifacts to Nigeria. These are 72 relics, which include 12 highly treasured brass plaques known as the Benin Bronzes. The bronzes are a group of several thousand metal plaques and sculptures that decorated the royal palace of the once mighty kingdom of Benin since the 16th century. These artifacts were looted from a region in modern-day Nigeria in a British military incursion. They later ended up in museums in Europe and the U.S. African countries have been fighting to recover works pillaged by explorers and colonizers as Western institutions grapple with the cultural legacy of colonialism.
Illegal hunting and hybridization with American crocodiles have for decades threatened their populations, with some species being on the verge of extinction. But there are some people who put their lives at risk to save the natural heritage. A Cuban researcher has released a baby crocodile that was confiscated from illegal hunters back into the wild. It was a happy moment for Etienne Perez, who went waist-deep in the dark water of Zapata Swamp to free Cuban crocs, the smallest known range of any living crocodile species. Cuban scientists were racing for quite some time to save the rarest crocodile. The government has protected virtually all of the vast swamp, widely considered to be the best preserved in the Caribbean. But the scientists say more efforts are needed to save the nature.
Releasing crocodiles seized from poachers is really impressive because we return the animal to a free life in the wild. In the case of the animals in the hatchery, we are trying to increase the historical range of the Cuban crocodile and, of course, increase the number of these individuals in the wild.
Cuban scientists estimate that around 4,000 crocodiles continue to live in the wild. But because the area they prefer within the wetland is relatively small, a climate-related disaster, increasingly common now globally, could wipe out the brunt of the population. They say illegal hunting for decades is also threatening crocodile populations. A wide range of cutting-edge digital technology is grabbing the limelight at the 2022 China International Fair for Trade in Services, which is underway in Beijing. The exhibition is featuring a wide range of products, including artificial intelligence, virtual reality, metaverse, and 5G. Visitors can be seen taking virtual reality driving lessons and enjoying scenarios, including different road and weather conditions, wearing VR kits. It's the leading and largest comprehensive comprehensive fair for trade and services in China. This year, an increasing number of traditional service companies are speeding up their transformations, resorting to smart technologies. The event has set up 9 thematic exhibitions, including cultural and tourism services, education and sports services, hygiene and health services, engineering, consulting and environmental services. Foam is fun to play with, particularly for kids, but when it's mixed with art, it also becomes a grown-up matter. And that's what a German artist has done, creating a sea of rainbow-coloured foam as an interactive art piece and allowing the audience to enjoy themselves and become part of the art. Colours mixed by Stephanie Luning were turned into rainbow-hued foam cascading down the stairs. The performance was called Island of Foam, version 18. Excited children jumped in as soon as the bubbly sea reached the base of the stairs, delighted to be playing in the rainbow playground. The art piece is made up of largely of water and a food colouring. The artist says she loves working in public spaces and reaching a broad audience of all ages.
Because I like to be surprised by the result myself, and I like to work with this... That you never know how it's going to turn out. You have the wind, the weather conditions, the locations, the audience. You never know how the people are going to respond and how the artwork turns out. And that's really what I like a lot, and also how to reach a broad audience.
However, Stephanie says there's tons of work behind all the fun, and cleaning up the mess can be hard. Interactive art is a form of art that achieves its purpose by involving the audience. The immersive art piece is part of the Greenwich and Docklands International Festival, an annual festival of performing arts and outdoor theatre. Have you ever heard of fighting nature with nature? Well, that's what the San Francisco metro system in the U.S. did to stop pigeons from overrunning the place. The station has hired a hawk as the new guard to patrol the area. Pac-Man is a 5-year-old Harris's hawk who has taken up the perch at the station. In terms of experience, he is pretty new, as he finished training only 9 months ago. The station recently renovated its building, installing netting and spikes to prevent pigeons from nesting. But these birds still seem to find their way to hang around. So with the Falconer Force, Ricky Ortiz and his hawk were hired this summer to keep the pigeons at bay.
So a typical day is we get here, we make our round, we start off down in the bottom inside the facility, making sure there's no pigeons hanging out in there. And then we work our way up here to the platforms and just check the ledges and the roof and make sure that they're not trying to sneak in on us, and keep them out. And he does a pretty good job of that.
The team patrols 3 days a week, and Pac-Man is allowed to swoop in and scare any pigeons sitting around. The Falconer says less than half of the pigeons they left after the first week of Pac-Man flying and establishing the territory. Commuters and station managers say they also noticed the difference. The Falconer says he usually keeps his feathery friend happy on the job by giving him snacks throughout the day. This also encourages the hawk not to feast on the pigeons and local rodents.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Former U.S. Vice President Mike Pence's aides told the committee investigating the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol that former President Donald Trump pressured his vice president to reverse his defeat in the 2020 election. According to the panel's report, Trump pressured and even threatened Mike Pence despite being repeatedly told that it was illegal to do so. Trump has repeatedly denied the accusations against him and has continued to repeat his claims of widespread fraud in the U.S. elections. Former U.S. President and his supporters, including many Republican members of Congress, described the January 6th committee as a political plot. We take a look at this issue and some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The website of the British newspaper The Daily Mail has written, "A new book reveals former President Donald Trump repeatedly assured aides after he lost the 2020 presidential election that he would remain in the White House and not cede power to Joe Biden. According to a forthcoming book by New York Times reporter Maggie Haberman, Trump told one aide, 'I'm just not going to leave the White House.' Maggie Haberman wrote, 'Trump seemed to realize he had lost to Biden immediately after the election, but his mood later changed. He told another aide, "We're never leaving. How can you leave when you won an election?" The book, Confidence Man, The Making of Donald Trump and the Breaking of America, is being released on 4th of October. The new revelation sheds more light on the chaotic aftermath of the 2020 election, which was marked by Donald Trump's refusal to cede power to Joe Biden and his efforts to overturn the election results. Trump began expressing his intention not to leave the White House in January of 2021 as incoming President Joe Biden was getting ready to take over. During a conversation with Republican National Committee Chairwoman Ronna McDaniel, Trump asked, "Why should I leave if they stole it from me?" In line with his efforts to overturn the election, Trump had called on his supporters to march on the Capitol and disrupt the certification of Joe Biden's electoral victory, which led to the 6th of January 2021 riot and attack on the U.S. Capitol. Maggie Haberman writes in her book, "Trump's pledge that he would not depart the White House had no historical precedent, and his declaration left advisers wondering what he might do next. The former president, however, did not make his intentions public. When asked by a reporter at the time whether he would be willing to leave the White House if Biden had won the electoral vote, Trump responded by saying, 'Certainly I will, and you know that I will.' However, he was still insisting that the election had been stolen from him through massive electoral fraud." The New York Times covers the same story but from a different angle. The U.S. Justice Department has issued about 40 subpoenas over the past week, seeking information about efforts by Donald Trump and his allies to overturn the 2020 election. Citing people familiar with the situation, the New York Times said Boris Epstein, a longtime Trump advisor, and Mike Roman, a campaign strategist for Donald Trump, had their cell phones seized recently as evidence. According to the New York Times, Dan Scavino, Donald Trump's former social media director, was also among those who were subpoenaed, which said the group included low-level aides as well as senior advisors. An attorney for Dan Scavino did not immediately respond to a request for comment from the Reuters news agency, while Reuters was unable to contact Roman and Boris Epstein.